Case number 22-1562, Philip Turner versus Michigan Department of Corrections et al. Oral argument to be 15 minutes for appellate. Mr. Weiss for the appellate.
Good morning, Your Honors, and may it please the court. My name is Samuel Weiss. I represent the appellant, Mr. Philip Turner. Mr. Philip Turner filed a pro se complaint from his prison cell that plainly stated an ADA claim. He alleged that he came in to Muskegon Correctional Facility with a lower bunk pass ordered by a doctor, that he was in chronic care for his medical conditions. He's in his late 50s.
What does that mean?
Which of those two, Your Honor?
Chronic condition, what does that mean?
Chronic care just means somebody who's, it's a common term in prison medical systems for somebody who is regularly seen for a kind of medical ailment.
Well, but, I don't know, I spent 21 years defending doctors in hospitals. I've never seen that before. Doesn't it have to relate to some injury or some condition? I mean, chronic what? Appendicitis, broken leg.
Right. So in the prison medical context, it refers to something that is permanent. So it's not going to be a broken leg. It's not going to be a...
But what?
But what?
I mean,
but what is an excellent...
When you don't tell us what the disability is?
That, it's an excellent question and gets directly to the rub here.
Thank you for that.
Yeah. Mr. Turner's complaint is very maddeningly vague on the medical issues that he came into the facility with. He's clear that he had medical issues that specifically assigned him to a lower bunk from a doctor's order. However, he does not identify what those are. And I would say that this is common of a lot of pro se complaints, where he includes a fair amount of information that is superfluous.
But he knew enough. This guy was smart enough to know that he was going to plead a disabled statutory claim. But he's not smart enough to describe what his complaint is?
Your Honor, I would certainly suggest that I don't think a fair reading of the complaint is that Mr. Turner was trying to game anything, especially given the very lenient definition of disability.
He's trying to gain money.
Oh, he's trying to gain money, but I don't think he's trying to game the federal court system, G-A-M-E, by being deliberately vague. I think he included some legalese that he did not have to. This is common in pro se complaints. He excluded some facts that would be very helpful. However, to this point, first, for reasons I can articulate at greater length, I think he did still state a claim. But second of all, even if this court found that some of that vagueness meant that he did not state a claim, there are two substantive filings in this case. He filed a complaint, pro se, and the district court dismissed it on screening with prejudice with no leave to amend. That is very unusual in this context. Typically, unless... Even when somebody's counseled, but especially when somebody's pro se, if there's any ability for amendment, unless amendment would be totally futile, a plaintiff does get another crack at filing a complaint. And here, Mr. Turner knows what his disabilities are. He knows what his medical conditions are. He could have, in an amended complaint, if he had been instructed to detail those at greater length, he could have. Here, this isn't a context where...
Here's a philosophical thing that I understand the court's supposed to help and what have you, but how far does the court have to go in those kinds of instructions or help before the court becomes an advocate for him?
Well,
you see what I'm saying?
I do see what you're saying. I think he's owed reasonable inferences, as anybody would, but the question is, what is reasonable?
If I don't know the disability and he hasn't told me, what inference can I draw?
Well, when you can draw the inference that when he had a medical pass that said he had to be on a lower bunk, and when that medical pass was renewed when he went to the Muskegon Correctional Facility, and then when that medical pass was ignored to have him placed on the topper bunk, when he complained about it for several times, explaining that he was having trouble getting up and down to the top bunk, the doctor removed...
Part of that is explained by the rickety chair, the rickety desk. So that trouble may or may not even be related to this.
Well, yeah, that's a causation argument. I think that's a reasonable inference that he's certainly owed. He says he went back to the doctor. He says, I have a bottom bunk pass. I don't know why I'm being put on a top bunk. I'm having trouble getting up and down. I have serious medical problems. That is in the complaint on page 11. And the doctor responded instead of providing him any sort of accommodation by removing his lower bunk pass entirely and without evaluating him.
Can I ask you just a kind of a process question?
Yes.
I know that the statute says that a district court has the power to dismiss a complaint without service for failure to state a claim, you know, among other things like frivolousness. Query, is there any standard on when the district courts should exercise this power? Because, I mean, this strikes me, there's nobody at the other counsel table. It strikes me as quite unideal for us to be resolving any type of significant legal issues in a case where there's only one side. It actually, in many respects, strikes me as quite unfair to the defendants. And the reason I say that is if you dismiss it without serving the defendants don't have the power to make their motion to dismiss. You're almost depriving them of their ability to file a motion to dismiss. So what's your understanding of the case law on when a court should exercise the sua sponte power to dismiss a complaint without serving a defendant? And if we end up reversing, the defendant is almost deprived of the ability to themselves have filed a motion to dismiss.
Right. Just to answer that second point last, a 1915 screening order that lets claims go forward for service by no means deprives defendants of the ability
Correct.
To file a motion to dismiss.
What does almost deprive them is actually granting, because if we were to issue a 30-page published opinion here, then the defendant gets served. The defendant's like, well, I didn't even get served, and now I've lost my motion to dismiss. That strikes me as strange.
Absolutely. I think the process issues, and I'll wrap around at the beginning of your question here, the process issues, I think, have been unfair to Mr. Turner, and were you to issue a 30-page published opinion on a wide-ranging set of issues would also be unfair to the Michigan Department of Corrections. I think that's absolutely right. That's why the Prison Litigation Reform Act, which instituted the screening requirement, it uses language at first like malicious, frivolous, where, you know, we're really talking about the sort of claims like my coffee's too cold or the FBI is bugging me. But then it includes the Rule 12 standard. And what that invites some district courts to do, I think, inappropriately, is to basically act as defense counsel for the Department of Corrections as a form of docket control. However, there is some case law in this circuit and in other circuits that because of these process concerns for both parties, even though, of course, this statute was passed to protect defendants, that claims should be allowed to go forward quite liberally.
Given all those concerns, what do you think would be the most appropriate relief here? Just a narrow remand? Or?
Absolutely. Well, Your Honor, I think that it would be appropriate we asked for a reversal in our brief on the grounds that he did state a claim. There's other grounds that defendants could move to dismiss. There are complicated sort of Fed Courtsy issues here like sovereign immunity or the deliberate indifference.
Do you anticipate filing an amended complaint?
Absolutely, Your Honor. So, and for that purpose, I think it's a bit of a distinction without a difference if this court reverses and says this does state a claim or simply vacates and remands. Because the reason that we are here, Your Honor, is because the district court did not follow the general practice of dismissing this sort of claim without any leave to amend. That if Mr. Turner had known that his issue was that he was being too vague with his initial injury, that he would have, he obviously knows what his injuries are, he would have amended, and those would have very plainly stated a claim. Perhaps the reason the court didn't do that is because the court made a legal error on program service or activity. Maybe that's what that prong of the ADA. The law on that is quite clear. We can discuss that if need be. So I think a little
Do you think we should read the Prison Litigation Reform Act? So it does quite clearly say that fail to state a claim upon which relief may be granted. So I suppose there's no wiggle room, but you could, I forget one of those Latin canons, read it next to frivolous or malicious. Maybe there has to be some type of obvious component to the fail to state a claim upon which relief may be granted. I think that's kind of designed for obvious cases where, you know, they're saying something like the ADA protects non-disabled people too, or something.
I completely agree. I think the Prison Litigation Reform Act was obviously passed as a version of docket control. It was very explicitly about separating wheat from chaff, getting rid of the frivolous claims, maintaining the meritorious ones, and for the most frivolous ones to not even bother the Departments of Corrections.
Oh, your client had a perfectly valid state claim for negligence. Could have gone to state court, said I'm forced to go on this wiggly chair, and it gave loose, and boom. Why should we worry about this case?
Well, Your Honor, I'm not sure why he didn't go to state court. He was operating pro se at the time. I wasn't his attorney. I think often a lot of prison litigation comes into federal court because the plaintiffs, even given the burdens of the Prison Litigation Reform Act and given issues like sovereign immunity, because
some of the litigation provides for real attorney fees.
Well, but even the pro se litigation, Your Honor, which is 95% of prison conditions cases filed in the federal courts are pro se, and of course they cannot get their own attorney's fees. So I think whether it's because that's how they've always done it, because that's what they know how to do, or the information that's provided to them.
You argue on the one hand, that's what they always do, that's how they do it, but my guy didn't know how to do it.
Yes, I think it's hard to read, again, even setting aside the inferences my client is owed, I think it's hard to read this complaint as a malicious and manipulative, the actions of a malicious or manipulative actor. I would just make one final point on the definition of disability, which is we've spent the whole time talking about whether he had a disability before his fall. I think it's pretty unequivocal that he had a disability after his fall. He says he went to the emergency room. This is not exactly a medical term, but he said that he split his buttocks and had to have his dressings changed every day, that he was unable to walk, that he was given crutches to get around, and that he was nonetheless still forced to go to a top bunk, and that when he went to his dressing changes every day and raised the issue of why he has to keep climbing up on this rickety chair, he was told by medical staff essentially that they thought it was funny. So I think at the very least, we have a pretty clear definition of disability there, which would satisfy the question.
What did he suffer?
Well, he suffered pain and humiliation and dangerousness. So in the same way that...
What pain? I mean, he had to walk on a cross, on crutches, and he had a split down his tail. He had that regardless.
Those are all damages questions. But and obviously we're at, you know, the very, we are before Rule 12 here. He had the pain and humiliation and dangerousness of climbing up a rickety stairs while he was had such an ambulatory disability that he couldn't even walk.
How about just climbing upstairs?
Yes, I the complaint doesn't have information about whether the facility.
It does say there were no stairs, I thought.
Or a ladder,
I guess, I suppose.
There was no ladder. So that's what he was trying to get half a loaf, basically, where when it became completely clear, you know, the ADA requires a reasonable accommodation, not every accommodation, just a reasonable accommodation. And he requested, when it was clear that he was not going to get placed back in the lower bunk, he requested a ladder, and he was told that ladders were too expensive by the warden. Unless there are other questions. Thank you very much, Your Honor.
Thank you for your advocacy today. I recognize you're most likely pro bono counsel, so we appreciate your assistance.
Yes, sir. Thank you.
Well, how did you enjoy your experience?
Thank you.
All right, that's the last case of the day. So if the clerk would adjourn.